It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
And that's why I have no cold opening for this time.
Okay.
I didn't even think of nothing. I've been very distracted.
Yeah? You've been very busy.
Yes. Trying not to throw up.
Trying not to throw up?
Yes.
Are you sick?
No.
Nervous?
Yes.
Oh. Why are you nervous?
Because the thing that's been in my head for a year and a half is now in the hands of other people, and the probability wave of its quality has not yet collapsed. I don't think it's likely, but the possibility still exists that the 10 people I sent it to today all have to find a nice way of being like, yeah, you make words bad. You should stop doing that. Your writing hurts us.
Hurts us. Yes. That might be good, though, if that's what you're going for.
That's not what I was
going for. Okay.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Magical Talking Hat Podcast, the only podcast in the world. I don't have one of these either. Is this podcast here right now talking to you? The only podcast in the world that moments ago compared Donald Trump to the Lawnmower Man on Twitter.
So this is really
I'm Tony.
This is really weighing on you.
Wait, I'm Tony.
And I'm William. This is episode 346.
Yes, I think you're right, but we can't do that. I have to explain the show first. We have a hat. It's magical in that it has its own email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Folks like yourselves, cool people, awesome people, bright people, challenging our future things, whatever, write into that email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com, with little notes, comments, topics, things like that. We don't do nothing. The hat magically transmogrifies itself. No, not itself. The emails in the little note cards with the information written on them to manifest physically within the hat itself. We, the servants, draw note cards out at random, read them on the air, talk about them till we're bored, do that for about an hour, that's the whole show.
I think you need to talk this out, because you're yes. Clearly...
I assume you've read the whole thing.
No.
For those of you
I
not
probably
in the know
won't
here,
even open it until after Halloween and everything.
Really?
Yes, because
see, I had a chomping at the bit vibe from you.
Well, I am, except here's the problem. My wife's going to have the next couple of days off. Mm. I don't want to start reading it, have it interrupted by 4 days, and then...
I see.
So...
For those of you who don't know what we're talking about, which is most of you, today, I finally sent out my book to the first wave of editors.
Yeah, and it's really hard not to open it, but I don't want to do it. I want to...
I was going to wait, because one of the editors needs a physical copy, and it'll have to be this weekend when I can get that put together.
I see.
And so give it to her on Monday. But then I was like, you know what? I've been stringing this along. Like, I'm getting tired of waiting. Let's just do it. So, I mean, she got sent an electronic copy. There's nothing stopping her from looking
from
at
beginning
it.
Beginning to look at it.
But, and I'll get her one on Monday. And I also decided... I said, let's take a month, and I'm like, because also a couple of the editors are out of the country, but we'll be back Sunday. So I was like, you know what? Let's call the 1 month time just November. End of November,
yeah,
we'll have some stuff.
I mean,
meanwhile,
I hate to wait.
Like, there's people at work that I like, two times today, this one person, I was like, you've read it all already, right? And then as they were leaving, I was like, you should count yourself lucky, because on the way out, I was like, so you're going to read it all tonight, and we'll talk about it tomorrow. And she was like, come on. I was like, you're lucky. William's showing up at 6, and if he hasn't read the whole thing, I'm going to be pissed.
No, I really hate to wait, but I think it would be better. I think you'd be better served if I did, is what it comes down to.
I am pleased to say that I think I have a story set up for Becca James Lowenstein, the Queen of the Space Pirates! Thanks to some help with my wife. She gave me some ideas to put together. I intend to approach this one very differently. The book you have now, which everybody says, what's it called? It has a title. It's the shittiest title ever. I don't like the title. I had to stick something on there. That's why I never use that title. I'm hoping editors can come up with a better title.
I'll try to think of something.
But with the first book, it was a very organic thing. I just started writing. Sure. I didn't have a story in mind. I just went for it.
Right.
And then had to go back and fix it. And that's going to be a mess in the long run. But anyway, with this one, I'm going to do it the more structured. I'm going to do some world building, just notes.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm going to have at least a basic plot outline before I start writing.
Sure.
So I'm pretty excited about that. You have to take those apples with you. So when we were in Minnesota...
Mm-hmm.
Visiting my brother. Went to an apple place.
Mm-hmm.
And
Orchard, usually, is what they're called.
And, I think they call them apple barns or something, actually, because it's a place where you go and there's, like, knickknacks to buy and all sorts of apple and apple-related products. But they were doing tastings. And this old guy is just cutting them up with a paring knife in chunks and hands you a chunk or whatever and all these different varieties. And we had those, which I believe are called Sonias.
Okay.
And at the time, I ate it and I was like, this makes me think of like a really good Red Delicious.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy was like, Red Delicious? That's just obnoxious to be compared to that. I said, no, good one. Like originally. I said, like, I'm from Iowa. He's like, oh, so like, I was like, yeah, like Jesse Hyde. He's like, oh, you know, I know about that. So then he was fine. I was like, that's what it seems like
Hawkeye.
It tastes to me.
Hawkeye apple.
Yeah, no, I tried called. That one too. So he kind of got it. But then, so Trish overheard, and Trish was like, so we're getting, and I was like, why do we have separate bags? She's like, these two are for William.
Oh, that's nice.
So I don't know now if they'll taste any good, but I thought they tasted very, like a good Red Delicious.
I do think if you go to Wilson's, who they got one of the original cuttings, you know, and grafted it.
Really?
So you can get a Hawkeye out there.
I did not know this.
And I think that I've had those. They call them Red Delicious because that's
what they're called now.
But they aren't like the Red Delicious you sometimes get around the holidays.
The shitty ones.
Yeah. These taste really good. So,
I did not know.
Yeah,
about
I think
that.
You can. I think Wilson's does have one of the. They grafted one of the original cuttings and
just in time for me to not get them this year.
Probably, yeah.
It's August to October. So.
That's right. Sorry, I guess I should have told you that before.
We got some Honeycrisp and stuff.
Honeycrisp is good. Very popular apple.
It's very good sweet apple. It is not... here's what I get all apple snob. It's not a very complicated flavor. It's just a good sweet apple.
Mm-hmm.
And I bought them, like, on purpose. Because I was like, this will be a good apple. So I don't dislike them, but... There's a lot of people who think it's the friggin' second coming. And I'm like, no, they're just really sweet and tasty. But there's ones with lots more depth of flavor and things.
When it comes to Red Delicious, and honestly, even though, again, they call them Red Delicious from the original tree, they're kind of different. They're so different from the Red Delicious you get in the supermarket that I just call them Hawkeye to distinguish them. So I have had, like, supermarket organic Red Delicious apples recently. That did not taste like one of the problems with Red Delicious lately is the skins can be really tough and chewy and they can be mealy on the inside.
And just flavorless.
Yeah. And that's not how I remember them being when I was growing up.
Mm-hmm.
So I've had some Red Delicious since then that are like, oh yeah, these are more like the ones that I had when I was a kid and they're very good.
They got bred for color, basically, and to
a certain size. And a certain shape.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so the rest is just Chatel.
Yep, that's right.
Did I tell you about the old guy when we were at this?
You were telling and I interrupted you. I'm sorry.
No, but last week when I was talking about my actual trip in Brad, did I tell you about the old guy? So there's this old guy who's just there while we're like shopping for apples and he's shopping for apples, I guess. And he's old, old. And he's decked out in John Deere stuff.
Oh, okay.
So he's like an old farmer. And I don't even remember. He interjected himself into our conversation, but I don't remember with what. But at some point, it came up pretty early on that he's like, maybe he asked where you're from. Something that caused me to say where we were from.
Okay.
And said, we're from Iowa. And he's like, oh! And he paused, and he's like, I wouldn't go around telling people that if I were you. And we laughed. And I said, no, it gets way worse. And he's like, huh? And I said, her? She's from a multi-generational family, caterpillar family. And he's like, oh! And then he starts telling the story about him and his John Deere plow, and his neighbor had the caterpillar plow and getting stuck on a clay hill, and did this whole big thing, just going on and on and on. He was a funny little bugger. So how was your week?
It was good. Still reading gothic fiction.
Okay, stop.
I'm not going to
start reading my book.
I'm not going to talk about it because it bores people. I don't think anyone thinks I know what I'm talking about. I probably don't.
Who are these people that are telling you that they're bored and you don't know what you're talking about?
I don't know. We're also watching.
You invented those people.
My wife bought the Universal has this 8 Blu-ray pack you can get of all of their classic monster movies.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So she bought that. We've been watching them.
Oh, cool. Because I was going to tell you, Shudder, the horror streaming service, is one of the ones I get, has a thing. I think it's just in time for Halloween, but I don't know if they'll keep them after Halloween. But it's all the old Universal movies.
Oh, yeah. Okay, so we got this. It's like eight of them, and we're like watching one a night, you know, until Halloween or whatever. Mm-hmm. So we've watched Creature from the Black Lagoon. Not very good. But you know, this was one of the first films that did a lot of actual underwater stuff, which is actually pretty good.
Yeah. So this is the old, like, 50s.
Yeah.
Okay, so this is not the...
But it could...
Because the later one supposedly was pretty decent. I've never seen it.
Oh, well...
I think Heather Locklear was the...
The thing... The problem problem with it was... It was low budget. I mean...
Yeah.
I don't mean low budget in that the effects weren't good, but it was low budget in that you could tell that they only had so many shots they could do, and, yeah, and that the director didn't have time to get better shots.
That's the thing that's been... I've been pondering... when I see low-budget stuff now, because there's some stuff that you're like, why would you even... I have to remind myself both time, and in some cases film,
yeah,
is an issue.
Well, and they were making... This was good. This was 3D. It was originally shot for 3D or whatever, and that was part of it, I think. So, I mean, I think that if they'd have had a little more money and could have taken more time with it, it actually might have been pretty good.
The is premise that your was wedding being, ring?
Yeah.
Okay, I just saw something metal here. I kind of do that too, but I was like, what is that?
The premise was good. The actors were perfectly fine. There wasn't anything particularly wrong with the script. It's just the shots were just not the best.
Yeah,
and you could tell they could have done better with that.
What? I saw something recently that I'm like, how things are shot has become a much bigger deal to me.
Yeah.
And stuff that I can say, like, that was horrible. It was really well shot, though.
Or, yeah,
like,
yeah, right.
That was a great story. That could have been a nice play. It was shot... Right. I don't know why they shot it that way.
Well, and then the next one we watched was Invisible Man,
mm-hmm,
which, again, this was the first time certain effects were used. And the effects
were... So the invisibleness was in 3D?
No, but, I mean, you know... I mean, nowadays you've got blue screen, green screen, all these ways to do this, and...
So many screens.
Then, what they had to do was use black, because it was black and white,
mm-hmm,
and then do multiple... You know, shoot the scene multiple times and then layer them on top of each other, kind of deal. But it looked really good. They did a really great job with it. The film itself also wasn't that great in terms. That was mostly a problem with the script.
The story of the Invisible Man has always been a tricky one because there's not so obviously an inherent story built in.
Well, as I understand it, H.G. Wells' story is kind of a. Like a lot of his stuff is kind of a social commentary thing.
Yeah.
And of course, when you're making a film, that might be too complicated. And sometimes when they simplify it, they oversimplify it. And that was the case here. It was just kind of dumb. But I love Claude Rains, and he was in it. You never saw his face really, but I love him, and that was fine. Then we watched Phantom of the Opera again with Claude Rains. It was. Again, this was another instance where they had to do things with the story to make it fit, and I didn't like any of their story
choices.
But
they had the really cool arm torches.
Well,
with real arms.
Overall, it was just not as strong a film in any way. Also, they had long operatic sequences that didn't really add anything to the story or anything else. I didn't know why they were doing that. But the
stick with Phantom of the Paradise, much better film.
The reason we've seen these films is because I'm kind of watching the ones that I anticipate I'm not going to like as much.
Oh, I see.
And then save the ones I really like for last. I've seen The Mummy and I love it. I like Wolfman. And I think Dracula is actually pretty good. So tonight we're going to see Frankenstein, because Bride of Frankenstein is what we'll see following night. And another thing I'm realizing is how much I don't like, what's his first name? Whale. John, is it John? What's that director's name?
I don't know. These are old people. I don't know.
Who directed, his last name's Whale. I can never remember his first name.
Jorge Whale.
Well, there was Gods and Monsters with Ian McClellan. It was about him.
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
All right. Then Ian.
Well, anyway, I don't really like his directorial style, but, so that's been interesting to watch those. Oh, and another thing we're watching is Black Sails.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Have you seen it?
No.
It is ridiculously well written and acted and directed and produced. I mean, it had to be really expensive.
Malkovich all over the place. Isn't that the one with Malkovich in it?
No. I mean, not right so far.
John Malkovich was...
But it's very good. I mean, like a lot of shows today, it's a little gratuitous with the nudity, but not a lot of times it works, like it belongs. In the narrative, you know what I mean?
These are two of my favorite things, is when you tell me about things with the sort of warning about too much nudity, and when my brother-in-law talks to me about music and musicians and warns me that there's some swear words in it.
Well, it's not really a warning.
Oh, it's like, oh, in that case.
It's not really a warning. It's more of what bothers me about the nudity in it is how I don't think it goes along with the narrative, how I think it's a gimmick.
Pirates are terribly dirty.
It's just a gimmick, you know, to get people to watch, which they don't need, because it's very well written, very well acted. It seems very authentic.
Yeah, but its existence is part of a formula that's being used now.
I suppose.
Period costumes and nudity.
I do recommend the show quite strongly. And the reason we're watching it is because the story.
I was going to sneeze. I didn't pull it off.
The characters are from Treasure Island.
Mm.
Did you know that?
I didn't know. This,
the whole thing is like a prequel to Treasure Island. So I thought, well, you know, I like Stevenson, but I don't have any interest in reading Treasure Island. But I've heard this show is good.
Mm-hmm.
I like good TV. So maybe I'll watch this show, and then that will lead to me maybe reading the book and having a motivation to read it.
A lot less nudity in the book.
It's not too bad as far as that goes. I mean, but I recommend it. I mean, if you ever have a chance to watch it, and just to see if it interests you at all. Because one thing that's really interesting about it is they try to sort of get into the historical... In this time and place, there are a lot of people who are engaging in piracy that don't really think of themselves as pirates, like the way we would consider pirates.
Privateers.
Yeah, they think of themselves more that, even though they don't have a charter, but they're just doing the same thing the privateers do. And a lot of them are hoping... I mean, they're just trying to get by for a while, and they're kind of hoping that eventually they'll be legitimate, whatever, like soldiers or business people or whatever they were before. They don't want to be
Instagram stars.
They don't want to be criminals.
Vloggers.
They know they are criminals, but that's not what they want. And also, some of the political organization on the ships is addressed, which is kind of interesting, which I'd read about and heard about, but seeing it dramatized is very, very interesting. So I don't know. I recommend it. I think there's been several seasons, or maybe it's even run its course. Is it done?
I don't know if it's done. There have been multiple seasons.
But
that's the thing. It was on a channel we didn't get, so I didn't really...
But it's like the writing and the acting and the directing and the production, all of it's so good. But, I mean, that's really all I have to talk about. So, has your week been totally taken up by thinking about your book and stuff?
No. Finally finished Hammer House of Horror, which I'm sad that it's done. It was so hilarious. And so now, because I still have to sit in the morning and just sit on the couch, and it's usually too early for me to get into a video game or whatever, so I've discovered there's a British panel show called The Big Fat Quiz, and there's a variety of them. They've done ones that are like of a specific year or a specific decade and things, and it's just a bunch of comedians are in a panel show, and they ask them various questions about history, sports, pop culture, whatever, for the time period in question. And they're long. They're like an hour and a half. I think they're 2 hours with commercials.
Mm.
And I had seen a lot of clips before, because they have their own YouTube channel where they'll show you, like, clips. QI has the same thing. But YouTube, not being super moralistic, was finally like, you watch a lot of these. How would you like this from some private person who has basically put the whole episode up on YouTube? And I was like, well, yes, I would. And now YouTube's like, well, we got a couple people that have done this for a whole bunch of them, so I'm watching those. And they're pretty funny. Today I've been watching one that was all about 2014, and I want to talk about it for only two reasons. One of the panelists was Mel B, a.k.a. Scary Spice from the Spice Girls. Hmm. She is not a comedian. She is not doing well on this. Like, she should not be on panel shows. The only humor coming from it is how much she's not getting along with everyone else on the show. But the other thing is, 2014 was the year of the Ice Bucket Challenge.
Mm-hmm.
And so they had a question related to that. And what different celebrities did. And after they answered that it was the Ice Bucket Challenge, they said, now we're going to show you a video of the greatest Ice Bucket Challenge ever. And this video, you may not find this funny. It's hysterical to most of us. You may find it funny. I don't know. Little girl. Maybe three, I want to say. Like, she can walk and she can talk, but not super well.
Mm.
Also, Scottish girl. Combination of three and Scottish means I can't understand a word she's saying. She's sitting in a little kid-sized folding chair, and she's saying some stuff,
mm-hmm.
fairly serious about it or whatever, and then she finishes, and she looks to the side where a bowl of water's coming over, and, like, not surprised or anything, like, she knew this was going to happen, and they pour the bowl of water over her, and like with most people, she sort of does this shudder thing, and she jumps up out of her chair, and she looks back, and she says, pretty clearly, it's still a Scottish accent, three-year-old goes, fucking hell! I loved it so much, I backed it up so I could watch it again. And then I watched the rest of the episode, and as soon as it finishes, the host is like, nothing we will do tonight can be as funny as that. She's adorable. She's got fucking pigtails and everything. She's so cute. She's fucking out. It was awesome. So that was fun.
Are you looking forward to the new video game?
Assassin's Creed Origins?
Yeah.
I didn't know it was coming out so soon. I thought this was like a sometime next year or something like that.
It's like next week.
Yeah, no, it's like... Or this weekend? It's tomorrow.
Oh.
What I'm hearing sounds good. Even like the bad reviews, the things they don't like are still things that I'm like, no, that's
good. You'd be fine with it, yeah.
It's a lot of... It's similar gameplay because they've had them before. Apparently, it's a little bit more RPG focused, which that's always good for me.
Well, that's good, sure.
Yeah, no, I'm pretty excited. I mean, it'll be a while before I play it.
Oh, okay.
It'll be a long while.
You'll put it on your Christmas list, maybe?
No. Way longer than that. My guess is that I won't be done with Final Fantasy 15 by Christmas.
Hmm.
And after that, I'm going to play Infamous Second Son, because I never played that. And then somewhere in there... Well, actually, first I'm going to play the Whereabouts of Edith Finch or something. It's a little indie game that I've been meaning to play. Then I'm going to play Infamous Second Son. And then there's Horizon Zero Dark and Mass Effect Andromeda somewhere in the mix. It's possible this game could beat them by a little bit, but I don't. My hunch is not.
Okay. Sorry.
I'm always like about a year later.
I know, but sometimes... you get excited about them.
Yeah, the one big one, Mass Effect 3. I jumped on that bandwagon just immediately because I was too excited. We watched a movie last night.
Mm-hmm.
It's a movie that I have been very excited to see. And I found out it was on Amazon, so we watched it. I think I've mentioned it vaguely before. It's called Dave Made a Maze.
Mm.
Very, very low budget thing from what I understand. Like... five figures, like mid five figures.
I think you've talked about wanting to see it, yeah.
Because they got a bunch of cardboard,
mm-hmm.
and that's mostly what they did. And the whole idea is that this guy built a maze labyrinth thing in his living room, and in the process it sort of grew, and it's bigger on the inside, and it's taken on a life of his own, so he's lost in there. And a bunch of people go in to try and save him. And it's such a heartbreaker of a movie. I think I would recommend it to you. It's got a lot of people in it that I knew. Primarily, the reason I was very... Well, one of the reasons I was interested is James Urbaniak is in it. The guy who did Venture Brothers. And a bunch of other stuff. I looked him up again. I'm like, wow, he has done a lot of live-action acting. I just haven't seen a lot of it. I didn't put it together until I saw it. The lead is a comedian named Nick Thune, who I also kind of like. Bob Caetti's in it. Bob Overton is in it in a totally wasted role. He has, like, three lines, and he's in, like, two scenes. It's kind of a shame. But a lot of comedians in it. Oh, God. It's such a heartbreaker because here's the thing. Super original idea. Really bonkers original idea. And technically it's executed brilliantly. It's really well shot. The effects are amazing. And they are practical, for the most part, cardboard effects. And there's a lot of stop motion and shit. It's amazing. And the stuff they did with it, unbelievable. Which is why I would recommend it to you. Mm. It's just a joy to look at. Mm. The writing is so terrible. It is so, like, and not in a, like, this person is bad at, like, I mean, they make functional sentences, like, it's just, I mean, everybody acts their heart out, but, like, nobody, no character makes sense, no character has much depth at all. Mm. 50% of the dialogue, in my opinion, you could switch it to any other character in the scene and it wouldn't change the scene. Mm. They're trying really hard to be sort of metaphoric, but I don't know why. And at one point they get really non-metaphoric, like subtext becomes text for this like one major monologue. And I'm like, this movie has not earned this. And it's really, I think it's really trying to be sort of like a crazy comedy so that all this stuff isn't weird. Mm. But it's a horror comedy. I mean, people die. Mm. That's a cool thing, too, though. The blood effects are all done with cardboard and stuff like that. Not unlike if you ever saw old theatrical productions where the blood would be these unrolled red ribbons.
Sure.
It's that kind of thing, and that's very cool, too. But, like, so many people, I'm like, I don't understand a single thing anybody is doing in this movie. It's not like a normal person would do anything. And it almost tries to come across like it's a mumblecore comedy. Except it's like the opposite because everybody's acting incredibly unrealistic. Like, and it's just, at sometimes it's painful, the dialogue. And so I'm so hurt because I'm like, that one thing sucks, and otherwise it's freaking amazing. Oh, wow, they are way early. I tried to do it this time. We couldn't get meal beforehand, so I had to order food, and I thought you'd miss out, but I think the delivery person is coming.
Okay.
So, but, I would recommend it, understanding that's what you're going into, but I think the good parts are worth seeing. But yeah, it was just, oh, so badly written.
Hey, Trish, summer's here! Trish, did you hear? Okay.
Yeah, so that, I mean, otherwise it was so amazing. And just original, which you get such points from me nowadays for being original, because it seems to happen so rarely.
Yeah, anymore, for sure.
Yeah, okay, I think this is mine. Sorry. For once, Trish and I ordered similar things, so it's harder for me to figure out which one is hers to give to her. but yeah, Dave Made Amaze, it's on Amazon Video... Yeah, I think that's gonna be yours. I also noticed in passing something free, or I mean something that you can stream normally, like Amazon Prime or Netflix or something, is getting the big sick in November. So people should check that out because I still highly recommend it. Verify that that's yours. I am 90% sure it's yours, but
because you also got
Kyle. I did, yes. All right, good. Yeah, so we saw that last night, and it really, like, messed with my head, because, like, I liked it, and I was angry at it at the same time, so it really threw me off. Trish's response, if I remember at the beginning, is that said, I didn't like it, though I did enjoy watching it. And I was like, yeah, no, I get that. That makes sense. So, yeah, that was weird. Anything else interesting happen?
We saw Alien Covenant. Did I tell you that?
No! Wait. Oh, Covenant. Okay, sorry. I get confused with the video game one. That's Isolation, I think. But, yeah, I heard not great things.
Oh, it's terrible.
I heard it's better than Prometheus.
I didn't think so.
You like Prometheus?
No.
Okay.
I did not. I'm finally convinced that what's his name?
Ridley Scott. Yeah.
I'm finally convinced that he has no idea why Alien was a success.
Yeah.
But he just doesn't know. Like, it was a complete accident, and when he tried, every time he tries to replicate it, the set Aliens was okay.
Well, and to be fair, in terms of popularity, I think Aliens helped make Alien more popular.
That's probably true.
And that wasn't him. I mean, that was Cameron.
That's true. But everything after it's been, it's just proven that he has no clue what made this film popular or what made it work. Because everything he does is so bad. I don't know how it can be so bad. I don't know how he could accidentally have made a fairly good movie.
I mean, you know, I've got issues with sequels and series in general, but I especially hate these ones that are, like, so far after the fact. I'm like, leave it alone.
Well, the thing is,
excuse me,
Prometheus was the same this way. It's not like there wasn't a halfway decent idea there.
Yeah.
And that they couldn't have done something with it, but it was just... I don't even know what was pitched. You know what I'm saying? And Prometheus is the same way. I don't know what was pitched to make someone say, let's do that.
And from what I know of the plot of Prometheus, I hate to say this, but it totally could have been, like, a different script that somebody was like, hey, let's turn this into a soft reboot of Alien.
Maybe.
Because that fucking happens way too often.
I don't know.
But I'm just... So many of these things... The Blade Runner one was ridiculous to me. I'm just like... No. It's too long. Like, you can't go home again. Like... And just for so many reasons. Because, like... Movies are a product of their time and place.
Mm-hmm.
And it's dumb to be like... Because here's the thing. It's 20 years later. Totally different time and place. So either we give you the same thing, which doesn't work now,
mm-hmm.
unless it's just solid nostalgia.
Which is kind of what they did.
Or we give you something different, in which case, A, different how, and B, as long as we're going different, why the fuck is it a sequel to the last thing? Just make a new thing.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of how I felt about Prometheus and
I think it's an economic draw. People are like, oh, I loved that old movie 20 years ago, so I gotta go see this.
But don't you have to pitch something? Besides, hey, this is an Alien movie, people will come see it?
Possibly not.
Well, maybe not. I don't know.
As long as you can end with an effective and believable people will come see it, I'm not sure it matters what you say before that. Because remember, it's not about art. It's about money.
But I'm pretty sure that it hasn't, I mean, most of the Alien movies after Aliens haven't really done very well, so it doesn't even have that going for it.
No.
I don't understand.
3 and 4 did not do well. 3, for the longest time, 3 was the only one I'd ever seen.
Oh, really?
I don't know how it happened. It was, like, on cable or whatever. People finally made me watch the first one. I still technically have not seen Aliens, and I still technically own it, but I haven't seen it. 3 was awful, though. Oh, my God.
My wife's kind of a fan of both... both of the first two movies, and she likes the other movies too for what they are, but you know, she understands they're not as good or whatever. And I just don't know.
Are you super excited? Starting tomorrow, new season of Stranger Things.
Yeah I mean, I'm not excited,
and I'm not at all either. You and I are the two. We may end up watching it. They keep, like, it's such a thing. I'm like, I feel like maybe I want to be involved in.
Well, we like Millie Bobby Brown. We like her, and we look forward to seeing her again.
What I love, though, is it's Netflix, so they put the whole season. They're putting the whole season out
mm-hmm.
at once.
Mm-hmm.
They also made an after show that they're putting the whole season of The After Show out at once.
Oh.
So, like, it's so tempting to just, like, binge The After Show by itself and be like, I have no idea what the fuck is happening.
Well, I mean, a lot of my problems with the first season, I don't think can be a problem for me in the second season, right? Because it's like, one of my problems with the first season was, this is just a bunch of rehashed nostalgia.
I definitely think that can still happen.
Really?
I do.
Oh, okay. Well.
I think they could shoehorn it in. However, a lot of the problems I had, I literally forgot the rest of that sentence just out of nowhere.
Sorry.
A lot of problems is the sketchy mythology.
Oh, okay.
And in theory, that improves over time because they put in more details. And that, while there are certain properties where I'm like, stop, the more detail you give me, the more it sucks. This one, I'm like, I don't care for this. I feel like I might if you told me more.
Well, but it seems like the more they tell you, the more it's going to feel like a Stephen King ripoff. And
possibly.
That's just not going to impress me at all.
People have been hunting at this for a while, but Crack just put up a thing on it. Illogical conclusions is what they're calling it. But they actually looked into things and did some research to find out, like, it was impossible for the evil corporation to make a Will Byers doll like that in the time frame when his body shows up at Ventures. It would literally have been impossible to do, even if you assume a couple of technological advances that they would have. And so then the only remaining conclusion is that the corporation preemptively has fake bodies of every member of the town just in case.
Just in case.
Which is so fucked up. And like, for some reason, for me, I'm like, that to me is more interesting. I want an evil corporation that has all of those.
That's funny.
Yeah, I don't know if we'll get around to it or not.
Well, I'm sure we'll watch it, but I don't know.
We're not watching a lot right now. Oh, no, we are. I need to talk about this. There's a bunch of stuff that, like, I'm DVRing it. We haven't really started it yet. And so we got into one and are now totally caught up, which is only, like, 4 episodes. But the half-hour sitcom on Fox, Ghosted, with Adam Scott and Craig Robinson. Had you not heard of this? You're being
It sounds
blank.
Familiar, but I don't.
What's
it about?
It's X-Files. Like, it's a secret underground federal bureau that tracks weird shit like monsters and aliens and shit like that.
Mm.
And Adam Scott is a disgraced former professor, disgraced primarily because his wife was abducted by aliens and everybody else is like, no, she wasn't. And Craig Robinson is a really badass LAPD detective who got drummed out of the force because of something that we don't know what, and now he's a mall security guard. And some super secret agent, just before he disappeared forever, sent a message back that said, if something happens to me, contact these two guys. And it was these two guys. So they grabbed him and they're like, we need you to help us. And so now it's like comedy X-Files, because it's absolutely a sitcom. Like, that's the whole thing. And I'm a big fan of both Adam Scott and Craig Robinson, so that's fun. They're putting together a pretty tight little ensemble cast. What is really weird, it's set in the present day, and there's a definite buddy cop vibe going on, because, you know, they're like oil and water, but they're learning to like each other kind of thing. They are pushing... there's a tremendous amount of influence from basically like the Beverly Hills Cop movies.
Okay.
And there's no reason for it to be that way, but they've just decided. Mm. And one of the primary ones is the music. The music absolutely sounds like somebody doing a copyright ripoff of the soundtrack, like Axel F and all that. And just that weird synth music that was in the background of all of that, and there's just a whole bunch of things that they're like really making this look like it's an 80s Eddie Murphy cop comedy, but it's not at all. Like that's a stylistic choice they made for no reason, but it works.
Mm.
And like, okay, It's not an incredible show by any means, but it's fun. Like, it's fun enough that we had three episodes when we first watched it, and we just watched all three in a row. It's cute. It's fun. I like seeing them do more stuff, both of those actors. I'm very curious about the ensemble cast that we're sort of putting together. Yeah, I like it. I would recommend it to people. It's kind of fun.
Okay.
So, check it out. It's called Ghosted, and it's on Sunday nights on Fox, I believe. Yeah, it's weird. It's in that block where they're all cartoons, except this one's not a cartoon. So, that's weird. Also, did you watch The Good Place?
No.
You know of The Good Place?
That's another I've heard of, but I don't
Kristen know. Bell is the main thing, and it's... As near we watched one episode one time that was just in the middle of the season, so like we didn't really have a lot of context, and we were like so, but it's Kristen Bell dies and goes to heaven, except they call it The Good Place, and the sort of backstory is that she figures out they confused her with someone else. And she probably should not be there because she was not a nice person. And so it's about her sort of trying to figure out how to be a nice person. And it's an intriguing idea. And the thing is, everybody fucking loves it. And it has a hell of a cast headed by freaking Ted Danson.
Yeah, I was going to say, I thought Ted Danson was in that.
And I keep wanting to revisit, and especially now because season two is out and Adam Scott's on it. And as near as I can tell, just from like clips or commercials or whatever, he's basically an ambassador from hell, or from the bad place, as they say it. And I'm like, that sounds different, because I love Adam Scott, but he basically plays the same part in everything. So I'm like, this could be fun to see him doing something else. But yeah, people say that's amazing, so I've been thinking about it. And I believe season one is like on Netflix or something.
Is it?
So, yeah. I saw some place where season one was free for me to stream. I don't remember for sure, but I thought it was Netflix. yeah. That's mostly... Have you read my book yet, like, since we started this? I guess not. Jazz, I hope you're not listening to this until you've finished the book. So, do that. Alright, let's hat some things. I'm so sorry for the sniffling, people. I'm taking allergy meds, and I'm still getting this. I don't know what that's about. I've had it for about a week or so.
Craig wants to know. Why do you think vinyl still has a following? Well, I mean, it sounds different. I mean...
There are two reasons.
And people like that, so...
Yeah, supposedly, vinyl has a different... And analog music has a different sound, supposedly. And it's not just about the vinyl... It's about the amp you're using and all sorts of other stuff.
Yeah, like there's a lot of things involved.
The equipment, but yeah, that's right. The thing. And hipsterism. People like to have the cool, weird, unique thing that not everybody has.
Yeah, well, with everything, and be into that. With everything, there's a certain level of, do people really like this, or they think everybody else likes it?
Do they think it's cool to like it? Yeah.
And then it makes you wonder, is there any section of this population that actually likes it.
Yeah. And that's and then there's things like, because like, what is it? Neil Young has tried two or three times now to start his own digital music service, because it specifically is a different coding that's FLAC, I think, which is supposedly a lossless digital compression. And apparently it is amazing. It's just way the fuck more expensive to do. And for most of us just listening to our Apple Tunes, we don't care.
Well, I can tell you that the thing about vinyl is that it's... When I was in college, there were people who were insisting that it sounded better. People whose opinions I trusted who were audiophiles.
I definitely think there's something to it.
Who I don't think we're just making it up. So whatever kind of fad might be going on now, I can tell you that there have been people since anything started taking over for vinyl, there have been people that have listened to, you know, discs or whatever and thought, yeah, this doesn't sound quite right to me.
And well, and cassettes were awful. But
yeah, cassettes.
In retrospect.
Right.
But,
and so,
but they were also fine enough.
So there, the whole thing about vinyl's been going on long before hipsters were listening to vinyl.
So
whatever reason they have for doing it.
No, was that last week? Did I talk about going to Chillicothe last weekend?
You've talked a little bit about it, but...
I did, okay.
Oh, I thought you did. Was it just this past weekend? Because then,
yeah,
obviously, you didn't.
It wouldn't have been. We were there, so...
You talked about Minnesota, that's what you talked about.
Yeah, that was the weekend before. Right. No, this was, so, sister-in-law, best friend, that lived with her forever and ever. They lived in a couple of apartments together, and they lived in her house together and stuff like that, but we're just friends. But best friend came out as gay.
Oh.
And at the same time, for sort of different reasons, moved to Florida. And is now working for Disney, like in food service, but that's how you do it. You get into Disney and then you get, you know, moved up.
Sure.
She's an artist and wants to be involved in that. Has a girlfriend now.
Okay.
Has had for like 7 months or something. And finally brought her back to home to visit for a week.
Sure.
So we went there to meet her. In the process, a bunch of other people, including best friend's brother, who I had known about for many years, but had never had occasion to meet.
Okay.
So I met him. This is why this is coming up. So, backstory. When I'm younger, young enough that I have a babysitter, one of my babysitters introduces me to the Great White North album.
Yeah.
I had never known anything about Bob and Doug McKenzie.
Okay.
I didn't know it was Rick Moranis and Dave Thomas. I didn't know about SCTV or any of that stuff. I just, somebody played this, thought it was hilarious. I was a kid, of course I thought it was hilarious. He made me a tape of it, because that's what you did back in the day. Like, I'll copy you a tape of it. And so I had this little copied tape that had a couple of blank spots, because you know that thing where every once in a while you'd try and hit play and you'd accidentally hit record.
Yeah.
And so there'd be a blank spot, which is funny, because at least one of them was just right, so it sounded like they were censoring some word. But anyway, so we're at this party, and something comes up where I make a reference, or we talk about how we know this, and apparently her family does, because they all start laughing. And then we keep talking, and then I hear the brother got it on his phone and is playing a specific track in the middle somewhere. And it within half a second, I know exactly where it is, and I just start saying it along with it.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, "Now you're my favorite person ever." And I was like, "I listened to this so many times." And I said, and I told him, I said, like, "You and I did the Here We Are, Peter's Donuts on here, and L.R. McKenzie." And he brings up another one, and I start doing it again. And he's just like, "What?" And I'm like, "No, this is not a healthy thing. I know that, but it's all in there." Like, yeah, that's how I learned about Rush. I didn't know about Rush. Yeah, I thought it was like just a joke thing. Like,
nice too, okay.
Yeah, it was like really Teddy Lee.
$10 is $10.
$10, you know.
Well,
so
I was
like, "Take off to the Great White North. Take off, it's a beauty way to go. Take off, you hosers." Speaking of things that don't ever need to come back, I hear they're gonna redo a new one. The two of them are going to do a thing. I'm like, I love you guys, but why?
Oh, they've been also wanting to do something like
that. And the shame of me is I have that fucking thing memorized, and I now know the background of it. Technically, I've still never seen Strange Brew.
Oh, wow.
And also, fairly big fan of Hamlet. So,
well,
and it's a retelling of Hamlet as hosers.
We used to watch it, like, when we'd go home for Thanksgiving, we'd watch it, my family. We even had T-shirts with Bob and Doug McKenzie and everything. I mean, because we did watch SCTV,
yeah.
So we knew all about that before they had their movie, before they had an album, and we thought they were great.
But here's the thing. So they have the album, and there's a section called "You Are Our Guest," and what you're supposed to do is on the back of the album, there were lines, and so you would say things and they'd say, you were supposed to,
oh, yeah,
supposed
right.
to be interactive.
Right.
Didn't have this, of course. Listen to it so much over the years. I invented lines that would fit in there. And I used to tell it to the tape player when that shit was playing. I was a strange fucking kid.
It was very clever, weird. Though.
weird kid. You are our guy. That's what did it. Is something happened and somebody made like a funny noise or like it was like a Halloween set or whatever, and it sounded like the theme, and so I went. And then yeah, and he did the Beer Hunter, and I knew the whole Beer Hunter bit. Good day, and welcome to party time. That's all I'm gonna say. I now turn the recreation over to my brother Bob, who'll give you all a game to play.
Was the difference between Canadian beer and American beer talked about in that, or was that
not in that one? You mean the tops?
Yeah, the tops.
Not in that one. That is weird you say that, though. I just saw something where that came up.
I thought that was on SCTV.
It was. It was, and I just saw that clip recently, and I don't remember why.
You know what? That might have been the bit they did at the beginning of Strange Brew, though. Or maybe not.
Okay, well, I just saw that clip.
Yeah,
it
must have
been. And is that how, because Americans had twist-offs,
because they
have
to
drink them fast.
They didn't have as much alcohol.
Exactly, yeah. No, but that's weird. Literally within the last week or two.
I think
I've
that might have been the bit they did
reason.
Right before Strange Brew. It might
And if you hear the history, the history is ridiculous because, like, they very specifically, like, made that sort of to be jerks. Like, they were commenting on stereotypes, but they expected, because they were commenting on Canadian stereotypes.
Hmm.
On a Canadian TV show,
mm-hmm.
They fully expected everybody was going to hate it and it would never be heard
and
from
be
again.
Angry, yeah.
And then it was just huge. And it's like, yeah, like my. I didn't put it together for years. I mean, Rick Moranis for me starts at Ghostbusters.
Okay.
Now, I knew him in several other places since then, but like that's my introduction. So it was weird that was him. And I listened to this album for years not knowing who the guys were.
Oh, okay.
Fucking Dave Thomas. My introduction to him, like where I can remember him and remember the name and stuff. Was fucking Grace Under Fire. Brett Butler. It was a show about a single mom with three kids who was a recovering alcoholic, and it was a really impressive sitcom, and it was like Roseanne. It was one of those around those times. It was like, let's do a sitcom about an actual real family.
Mm.
And eventually got taken off the air because the actress was still having alcohol issues, and eventually it was too bad. But he played her like platonic best friend / maybe neighbor. I think he was the local pharmacist or something. And that's the first place I know him from.
Mm.
And years later, to put all this together. Not to mention, Dave Thomas is also the name of the founder of Wendy's, who is now dead.
Yeah.
And not to mention, Dave Thomas had a run in season 2 on Arrested Development as a British guy.
Did he?
He was Charlize Theron's uncle.
I don't remember that.
Do you remember Charlize Theron on Arrested Development?
I don't remember that.
Her name was Rita, and she was British. And she had won a silver medal in the Olympics.
I do not remember that.
I'm trying to avoid major spoilers
here. Don't. I'm like, sure I won't remember.
No, but it's absolutely one of those things that if I told you, you'd be like, oh, because it was like half the season's plot this. And it's one of the few things that is really cringy to rewatch in Arrested Development.
Oh, okay.
But he was there with a fake British accent. And it was just very weird to say. So yeah, Vinyl. Craig, warmer tone. What? Okay. Presumably, I know you grew up Amish, but presumably there was a record player in your house.
Yes, there absolutely was.
And presumably, prior to you being of an age or interest to purchase your own records, your parents had a record collection.
That is correct.
What was in it? What? Give me a rough demographic sort of breakdown, a tour, if you will.
Christmas and holiday records, yeah.
This is the thing. Like, I know we had ones that weren't Christmas. We never fucking played them. But we played all the fucking Christmas ones. The exceptions were, there were a couple of 45s that we would play. MacArthur Park, because I loved it and my mom loved it. And Benny and the Jets, because my father was obsessed with it. So we played those a lot. But otherwise, the LPs were Christmas ones. And there were others, but we never played them.
Oh, we did have some comedy ones. There was this...
We had Rap Lingers.
There was this comedian, Alan Sherman, I want to say.
Yes, that
Hello
is,
Mata,
that
Hello
is the name of a... Yeah.
We had a couple of those.
Talk to me about the Christmas ones. Who we got?
Seems like we had some Cosby comedy albums even.
See, that we had those on tape.
Okay, I think we might
have. We had quite a tape collection as well, and so a lot of the stuff we listened to was on tape. But it was Christmas films, and the one I always remember was New Christy Minstrels.
Okay, well...
And I still remember most of the songs off of that album, which is weird as hell.
We had... Dad worked at Firestone in Des Moines, and as a gift, they gave him 1 year this Christmas album.
Okay.
Some of the music was like, I don't know where they got it, but some of it was like people you would know. Yeah. Although I can't remember off the top of my head because, you know, we had one of those record players that would switch out the record. Like if you put a stack of records.
It would flip it over. It had the little arm.
Sure.
Yeah.
And so I never knew which thing was on which thing.
Yeah.
So I want to say we might have had I want to say Perry Como, but I'm not sure. Mm. Or Andy Williams. But again, they might have just been on compilations or something, and I just don't remember it right.
No Mario Lanza?
No, I don't think so.
My high school friend got a car, finally. She was old enough, and I think her parents helped, and it was a cheap old Toyota. And she was driving it one day with her friend, and her friend went to like change the radio or whatever, and the little indicator, the whole thing pushed in. They're like, oh my God, does this have a tape deck? No, it had an 8-track.
An 8-track, wow.
And so they went to, at that point, we still had the old-timey music store that sold vinyl and sold some 8-tracks. So they got some. But then a few months later, I'm in the car, and I see something in the glove compartment when I went to get one of the 8-tracks. And so we reach around, and it was like behind the molding and stuff, and it was an 8-track of Mario Lanza singing Christmas standards. And it cracked me the fuck up.
I think we might have, I mean, we had something with Bing Crosby on it, too.
Yep.
Now, my grandma had an 8-track machine, and quite a collection of 8-track tapes, but I never really looked at them to see what they were.
Ugh.
And she was never really playing them when I was around. I don't even know why. I mean, the 8-track player and the collection was like right in the living room. So if they wanted to listen, they could just do it. But they never did as far as I know.
My parents were enough in the mainstream culture that I think we had a lot of, you know, AM gold kind of things and, you know, yacht rock and a lot of what would have been the adult contemporary of the 70s and 80s. I think we had a lot of that. When I started buying albums, the first ones I remember having, in fact, they might have been hand-me-downs, were LPs of the soundtrack to Star Wars and the soundtrack to Empire Strikes Back.
Sure, we got those.
My sister got the LP that was the soundtrack to Lady Hawk, and we listened to that forever. And I got the soundtrack to Labyrinth.
I mean, I think we might have gotten Superman the movie also.
And then I got a Chipmunk one. And it was a later Chipmunk album. So, like, it didn't have Christmas Time Is Here, whatever. It was one that was, like, in the era when I was watching a cartoon that was about the Chipmunks. And I think that's it. And then pretty much I made the shift to cassettes.
Now that I think of it, when any of the music that we got, and we got soundtracks also, that was a big thing for us.
Yeah.
We got cassettes. We never did too. Get.
And well, we and I'm just get, refining on Appatoons. The soundtrack to Rain Man is one of my favorite things in the world.
Oh yeah.
And I had it on cassette, and that's long gone. But Appatoons had it, and so I listen to it now.
My brother Scott loves or used to anyway, like the soundtrack to The Natural.
Oh really?
Yeah. There's some movies you don't think about. You know, because the soundtrack is so well integrated.
Rain Man has a few hits. I mean, everybody remembers Ico Ico. And there's a couple others that are just songs they put on there. But most of it is this Hans Zimmer music that is really unique and really of its time. Like, it was just enough of sort of synth poppy, but it was still soundtracky music that I really enjoyed that.
But yeah, I'm pretty sure that when we were kids and we got music, right away it was on cassette. We didn't get vinyl ever.
Yeah. And, of course, when I hit my stride, right about when I was hitting, like, puberty and the beginnings of disposable income and things like that, singles happened.
Oh, yeah?
Which is funny. I don't think we ever called them singles back when we had singles. I think somebody came up with that term later. But, no, I had a shit ton of those. Because that was my druthers, was to listen to the same song over and over again. So I do select. So I would get ones. Milli Vanilli, I had a big Milli Vanilli stage. I got a bunch of singles from. I wouldn't get albums. I'd just get whatever the single was.
Well, we would mostly record things off the radio, honestly.
I did that a lot,
and
too.
And just made mixtapes off of what we
Which
recorded.
Is funny, because if I heard a song I like, I start hitting record. So sometimes I didn't get the first
Like the very beginning,
verse.
Right, right.
So, like, for years, there would be songs that I'm like, I have this song memorized except the first verse. Because I've heard it, like, twice, ever. Because I would just play it over and over again. And actually, a game that first came up with tape recorders, and the reason I originally wanted one, because my cousin had taught me this, is we would pretend to be a radio station.
Oh, yeah.
And we would just have our little banter, and then we'd put a song in every once in a while, and stuff like that. And we thought that was really fun. And I would do that, and I would have real songs on there that I liked. So that was kind of fun. So vinyl, yeah, we don't know. Where do they get that black stuff to make the album?
You know, the thing is, I can't tell you, like, I can't tell you what music my mom liked.
Old albums?
My mom didn't really listen to the radio or talk about music she liked. And she...
Some people just aren't that into music.
I think that kind of applies to... I mean, she was. I mean, like, when I would perform and stuff, she'd be really into it. And she would go to concerts, and she clearly liked... But it was like, Dad was sort of initiating that. She liked it when she went, but it didn't seem like she'd
and
go
it's
just
different,
for herself.
It's different than just sitting and listening to...
And my dad's taste in music has always been very eclectic, and he didn't collect a whole bunch of albums. And sometimes it was 50s rock, sometimes it was country. Now he's really into bluegrass more than... He was always kind of into it, but now he's really into it, so I don't know.
So they take, like, old albums and put new people on them?
What?
Could we do that?
What are you talking about?
This is a bit from Grapevine North Album.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
Like, where did they get that black stuff to make the albums?
I forgot about
like,
that.
from old... No, it said 10 bucks each. Is it so... Is it where is he making the albums? Oh, he said he was making them at his place. So do you think it was like free? Yeah, for him, yeah. And he says, where did I get that black stuff to make the albums
the
from?
Black stuff.
He said, from an old album. And he says, really? They take like old albums and put new people on it? I said, yeah. He said, could we do that? I said, yeah. He said, boy, oh boy, we got hosed. We could have done that ourselves, eh? He said, no. I said, why not? He said, don't know how. I go, that's a good point. Those are my favorite bits out of it, was when they cracked themselves up.
Yeah,
when
they kind of cracked themselves up.
And the final joke is my absolute favorite, when they're super drunk, and they're like, hey, do you remember where we parked? Yeah. Okay, where? Outside. All right, people. That was our show.
And you remember a lot more from this than I do. I mean,
it's fucking stuck in there. People asked me questions about an episode of Seinfeld the other day, and I could give them all the plot threads from that episode in detail. And they were like, "Is anybody else scared that he has this?" And I was like, "Me. I am scared that I have this information. I did not do it on purpose. I would much rather replace that space with something else. I'm not even that big a fan of Seinfeld, but I remember it." Anyway, so this probably wasn't much of an episode for y'all, but we had fun, so fuck off.
We did have
but
fun.
Don't fuck off. Listen again next week. And write that, the magical talking hat.
He insults you, then realizes how much of a mistake that is.
Yeah.
And then tries to recover.
What are you, new?
So funny.
Join us next week. And, in the meantime, read my book if you're one of those people.
Yeah.
And... Yeah. Take off to the great white north. Take off.
It's a beauty way
it's
to go.
It's a beauty way to go. Take off. I feel like at this point we're gonna get sued.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.